The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Green Front, and today we're going to be talking about, you guessed it, the State of the Union. Of course, all of us with green lenses on, we're watching through that filter, waiting to hear about climate change. There were those of us who were bold enough to even fantasize, I guess, that he would talk about the state of the climate, not just the State of the Union. Of course, the State of the Union is impacted by climate change, as is everything on the planet. But alas, we were disappointed with that. But there were some high points, some things that were encouraging, but overall kind of not quite as satisfying as we had hoped. It was a brilliant speech, of course, but as far as environmental issues and energy issues, still kind of missing in action. And to comment on that, going to have a couple of friends. First of all, Roger Schemel, if I pronounce his name correctly. He's a good friend via email. For the Global Warming Education Network, we chat back and forth often through our friend, the extraordinary blogger, prolific blogger, D.R. Tucker, about what's going on. And Roger and his wife, Susan, who started the Global Warming Education Network as Republicans concerned about climate change, trying to do their part, have been talking about the need for a State of the Climate address, and as well as other great works, not only getting arrested and protesting for Keystone to not get passed, but also to get something called Drive the Limit, or close to that. So, Roger, thanks for joining me.
You're welcome. It's great to be here, Betsy.
Okay, Roger, how do you say your last name?
Schemel is correct. Long A.
It is. Good. I thought so. So, first of all, you say you were disappointed, but before we get to what wasn't there, what did you hear that you liked from the president?
Well, I'm delighted that he at least uttered the words climate change, for one thing. We were afraid he'd totally ignore the topic, and so I give him points for uttering the words, and I also like the fact that he mentioned some other things that need to be done, like switching government support from the fossil fuel industry through subsidies and tax credits to giving support to clean, green energy like solar and wind.
Absolutely. And he really, let's just give him credit for touching on so many issues and being strong. And it was the Obama from the past, you know, in terms of a brilliant orator and, you know, really sounding upbeat, which kind of left the Republicans in a position of having to criticize that. And I don't know. It just, I thought it was a good night for Democrats. And are you still a Republican, by the way?
I'm currently registered as an independent.
Good for you. So as an independent, extremely concerned, as we all should be, about what's going on with our climate and our environment overall, why did you give the president, I believe it was a D?
I gave him a D because knowing
that's
what...
D as in dog, not D,
D as in
boy.
D as in dog, actually a D minus. Because knowing what we know, you'll recall, I'm a chemist and also an MBA, so I understand the science of climate change, and I also understand quite a bit about business and the short-term focus that business has on things like next quarter's profits and whatnot. And climate change is something that happens very slowly, so we can't be focusing on the short term. And as you know, too, another big issue is that climate change is complicated, and many people that I talk to don't understand how we could have a big problem facing the country if the president isn't talking about it. So that's why we were promoting, and we still think that Obama should give a State of the Climate address. Possibly it should be separate, because he had a lot to cover last night in the State of the Union, and it's not, the climate change issue isn't something he can cover in a few minutes. But without the president speaking about it, most Americans, I'd estimate 98% of Americans, do not understand that climate change is A, real, B, serious, and C, urgent in terms of needing to either deal with it or, to put it in a more positive context, to take advantage of the opportunity it gives us to create millions of jobs as we transform our economy from one that's based on fossil fuels to one that's based on renewable energy. That's going to take jobs to restructure the electrical grid. It's going to take jobs to create the automobiles and insulate the homes and businesses, as Obama did mention. So there are a lot of things that I liked, as I said, but he missed an opportunity while everyone was listening, while he's standing there at his bully pulpit, to begin to educate people about climate change. And he could have at least spent a minute or even 30 seconds to say, I've got to get back to you with regard to this climate change thing. It's real, serious, and urgently needs our attention.
Yeah, if he had just kind of flagged it, you know, for another day and said, by the way, we do have serious issues here with our climate. There's problems and we'll address them in another forum. That would have been, you know, certainly more satisfying than what we got, especially because when he did mention climate change, it was in the context of what Congress has not done, which is absolutely true and correct to at least in part blame Congress. But it's basically giving up on legislation anytime soon. And that is disappointing. And, of course, you're right that if the president talked about it, more Americans would feel some urgency. But it's, you know, the representatives in Congress as well, certainly those who are actively trying to thwart any such legislation. And then, of course, the media not covering it. I happened to watch CNN and MSNBC coverage after the State of the Union, and not one, you know, mention of climate change or energy in terms of analysis. And that still speaks volumes.
I
also watch Current TV, and even Current TV, owned by Al Gore, I may not have seen every minute. I may have walked out of the kitchen for a second, but even Current TV didn't talk about that, what we're talking about right now. And that is exactly why we do need one show at least dedicated to these issues.
That's incredible. And what's even more incredible is I'm sure you watched the Republican rebuttal from Mitch Daniels, governor of Indiana.
I swallowed hard and I forced myself to watch it, yes.
That was pathetic. To think that the country that was leading the world in science has one of its two major parties denying the existence of climate change, which is based on the science that made our country great. And looking forward to November, as I mentioned to you in a discussion we had, I think Obama now has the opportunity to use his bully pulpit to make climate change a campaign issue. And if he does it right, and I'm sure he can with his wonderful speechwriters and all the other powers at his beck and call, he needs to frame climate change as a defining issue for our future. And to point out that the GOP candidates do not, either they don't understand the science or they've been bought out by short-term money interests from the fossil fuel industry, or there's some other inexcusable reason that they're not examining climate change and able to conclude that it's a serious threat to the country.
So if you're an independent, you're probably recruitable to be a member of the Green Tea Party. I think this is what we need to launch right about now, to make climate and environmental issues and energy issues, you know, really a wedge issue, group of wedge issues, really, if it's going to be a close race. And, of course, I'm hoping it won't be, but if Obama really is our best shot, and then we'll have to, of course, make sure that in his second term, if reelected, he is as bold as we thought he could be at one point on this most important of all issues.
You're right. And as you know, Gwen's mission is to spread awareness and encourage action relating to global warming and its adverse impacts. We've been working for 5 years to try and get the word out. We've been writing to the president. We've been writing to the candidates. We've written to Huntsman, who's now dropped out, and to Romney, saying that if you would make climate change part of your platform, we will do everything in our power to make sure you're the next president, assuming Obama isn't going to do it. All we got back was requests for campaign contributions in a form letter.
Oh, that is so disappointing, aggravating, really. Because, even as a, you know, dyed-in-the-wool, lifelong, you know, Democrat, I was hoping that Huntsman would somehow be the nominee, so at least we would have a discussion on climate change. It would be part of the conversation. And,
right.
of course, it couldn't happen maybe because he had other issues. I think he was too intelligent. Maybe that's a stumbling block for the Republicans.
being
courageous enough to call it what it was, which was the elephant in the room, that Republicans were not listening to scientists and were challenging, you know, evolution and all that crazy stuff. And too bad that he didn't go further. And I hate to think it's because he was so intelligent and outspoken, but it's almost what it looks like.
Exactly. And speaking of elephants in the room, I think we need to give credit to Senator Whitehouse from Rhode Island, who has made several speeches about climate change being apparently a taboo subject in Washington, but that it shouldn't be. And Senator Whitehouse, who I don't have any connection to other than admiring his bravery and his courage, has made several speeches that basically say climate change is real, it's scientifically valid, and why aren't we doing more about it? And I recognize the courage because when Susan and I were in Washington on one of our many trips down there to support climate activism as organized by Bill McKibben of 350.org and others, we were in the halls of of Congress, and we ran into our representative from our local area, and I won't name him just out of courtesy, but we said we're down here working on climate activism, and he almost did a double take and like was hushing us, you know that's not a topic we talk about down here, and we're going, what are you talking about? This is the most important topic for the country's future. But it gave us a sense of what the opponents of working on climate change have been able to do in Washington. They've made it a taboo subject, which is unbelievable to me.
I couldn't agree more, and I so applaud you and Susan for what you're doing. Did you actually get arrested when you were down there for a couple of protests?
Yes, we did. August 31st, Susan was number 32 out of 111, and I was the last man standing. I was arrested number 111 after spending 3 or 4 hours sitting in front of the White House and refusing to obey a lawful order to move, just to indicate our disappointment with the president's not doing more about climate change and asking him to veto the pipeline, which at least for now he's done. And hopefully what we'd like to see him do when he continually in the future refuses to make the pipeline possible is to point out that it's not because we're worried just about the aquifer or the spills. We're worried about what all the CO2 produced when all of that oil is burned, likely in other countries, what all that CO2 is going to do to the atmosphere. As you know, we're supposed to be safe under 350 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere. We're now at 390, and we added more in the past year than we ever have before. So we're basically hurtling down the wrong path towards very serious consequences. And the president, as our leader, as leaders have done since the beginning of time, should be leading us away from danger and towards safety, which means away from fossil fuels and towards clean energy.
Could not agree more. So at least we got a reprieve.
Yeah, at least we got a reprieve. And I would encourage your listeners and everyone else that they know to keep putting pressure on Obama to get the word to the people, because I saw a poll, and it was showing that only 2% of Americans today would base their choice of who they would vote for president on the person's stance relating to climate change. And knowing what you and I know about how serious this is, if you're not looking at that as a very important issue, then you simply don't understand that we may be facing really serious shortages of food and water, and I don't mean it by the end of the century, but I mean this decade, and that's how close I think the serious problems are. And the problem with climate change, too, is that it has tremendous momentum. We can't simply wait until food shortages appear and then say, oh, okay, I guess we should have worried about this sooner, so we'll call out the Marines and do what we can. But because of the momentum of climate change and the volumes of the CO2 in the atmosphere and the inability to suck it out of the atmosphere, we're going to be facing whatever problems come up, including these intense storms we've had, for years beyond the point where people get it, unless the president uses his bully pulpit to, you know, look to the future as he has the ability to do. It's sort of like he has a radar that the average citizen doesn't have, because our government has spent $20 billion on climate research in the past 20 years. So he knows what's coming, and to not warn the citizens who don't understand this about the problem, to me, is a real failing. But again, we give him credit because he said the words. The GOP is acting as if it's not a problem. And in fact, what really disturbs me about Romney and Gingrich is that they both have spoken in favor of doing something about climate change in the past, and now they've reversed themselves. What's up with that?
Oh, just when we can least afford that. I mean, just for a minute, think if since the current crop of Republican contenders for the White House, none of them believe in climate change or believe it's a problem we have to deal with, let's just say they've got a 50-50 shot of getting to the White House. Can you imagine what that means? I mean, for the next 4 years, if we have, you know, a deliberate attempt to not deal with this issue, when James Hansen and all the leading scientists have said, you know, we have maybe 10 years to turn this around, and they said it a few years ago?
Yeah, it really does. If you want to, the picture in my mind is that we're, picture us, all the citizens, kind of together, wandering in the darkness, very close to the edge of a cliff, and we're not sure how close we are to this, the tipping points that climate change can present, beyond which we may be incapable of reversing it. And our leader is up there talking about short-term issues, which, while admittedly important, you know, I'm not one to say jobs aren't important and the economy isn't important, but we're wandering in the darkness close to a tipping point or an edge that we can't see, and we need him to, you know, to switch on the lights, tell us to go left or right or up or down, to give us direction, and point out to Americans that, again, as I said before, we can create jobs. As he hinted last night when he spoke of rebuilding our infrastructure, we can create jobs by moving in the right direction to limit climate change. We can retain the jobs that China and other countries will be taking away from us if we don't move. So it's really a win-win situation. In fact, it's a triple win, because if he explains this properly, he can assure himself of a second term. He can move us away from climate change that's going to cause huge problems, and he can create jobs and boost the economy all at the same time. And where is he going to get the money? Well, okay, stop giving the subsidies to the fossil fuel industry and take a closer look at our military spending. I'm not a dove by any means. In fact, I think of myself as a climate hawk, and I also am concerned about protecting our shores. But right now, we're spending 60 times more on military spending than on the environment. And it reminds me of the cartoon character Pogo saying, I think, I've discovered the enemy, and he's us. We're spending all this money to fight the invisible threat of terrorism, even though bin Laden and other terrorists are gone. And meanwhile, we're ignoring this problem that's looming 1,000 times greater, spending 1/60th of the amount of money that we're spending on terrorism. It's just not a balanced picture. And it, you know, I'm a scientist. I'm also somebody who spent a career analyzing problems for clients as part of my consulting business that I did before starting Gwen, and it's just totally illogical. I would like to be president just for a day.
Can I be your vice president?
Yes, you can, and we'll just fix this thing. It'll only take a day, and then we'll let it, you know, let the president carry on with this, worrying about all the stuff he talked about last night.
And I'll be maybe the press secretary or speechwriter. That was a brilliant speech, though. We've got to give him that in terms of hitting all, not all the notes, but one not deeply enough and loudly enough, of course, climate change. But at least it was, I don't know, it inspired me. It got me fired up. It got me angry, frankly, about what exactly everything you're just saying.
Oh,
and
me
how
too.
We can ill afford another 4 years of this surreality.
Yeah, if we get the four more years beyond Obama with GOP, I think it's Katie bar the door. I don't know what will happen, but I'm not at all encouraged. And, you know, my mom always used to say, things have a way of working out. So I'm hoping, bless her soul, that somehow out of the blue there'll be a way out of this. But my disappointment last night is evident, and even though it was a great speech, I admire his speech-giving ability, and I might add, too, that if I were a Republican sitting in the audience, I would have felt somewhat ashamed of how I've blocked our leader from doing what he needs to do to run the country. I mean, give me a break. The Koch brothers and the people they helped get elected, I hope they're happy with what's going on, but they're going to also suffer, and their kids are going to suffer, and it just it made me feel that something's got to happen here. I don't know if there'll be a scientific breakthrough that will allow us to suck carbon out of the atmosphere quickly enough, but at the rate things develop in science and become commercialized, and at the rate we're spending money on, again, military things instead of energy research, I wish I could be more optimistic about the future.
Oh, well said. And you said your mother used to say, and you know, you're a parent. I know your daughter is getting married in June, so you'll soon be a grandparent. If maybe you have some other children who have already made you grandparents, you and Susan, I don't know. But one of the things we parents, you know, most love and need to do is kind of tell our kids, whether, you know, they're younger, they're crying, or they're upset about, you know, where things are going in their life, that everything is going to be okay. And, you know, to have to not be able to say that in terms of what's going on in the world that they're going to inherit, it's heartbreaking. And that's just one generation, let alone what's coming behind them.
I have to say, Betsy, that you touched a sensitive point there in the way that our oldest daughter is expecting a third child any day now. And so
you are a grandpa.
I am a grandpa, and we're standing by, and we have to keep our mouths shut about the number of kids that each person has, thinking of zero population growth and whatnot. But we
as
have
long
three
as
daughters.
They have you as a grandpa, we need people like that.
Yeah, well, thank you. We have three daughters, and we'll have hopefully three grandchildren. And so, we do feel sad for them, because as a parent, you do, as you said, want to assure your kids that everything will be okay. And you also want to, and this gets back to Obama, you want to encourage your kids, when they're too young to know better, not to always focus on the short term or what gives them immediate satisfaction, and point out the need to look at the long term. And I'm thinking of, let's say, homework. You know, how many parents haven't had to encourage their children to complete their homework assignment rather than, you know, watch TV or message their friends on Facebook or whatnot, because the TV is there drawing you in, the friends are there drawing you in, and anyone who thinks about it for a minute can imagine that if you're always optimizing the short term, you're not going to have people being educated, you're not going to have people so much going to work unless you pay them every day or something to say, come in and I'll give you some money. So we have to, as parents and as a country, balance the short term and the long term, and that gets back to how climate change isn't something that's shouting out, deal with me today. It takes the fore part of the brain to, think about balancing the short term and the long term, and that's what we need and expect from a leader of what was once described as, you know, the world's greatest superpower. And if we're not going to take into account the future and deal with it, you know, it's very sad, because we have the knowledge, we have the money, everything is in place to do this. And what gets me, I think of all the things humans have done over the course of human history, the symphonies that have been composed, the artwork, the writing, and, you know, it's impressive what Einstein, Michelangelo, and others have done. And that was tough stuff, you know, to carve those carvings and write those symphonies.
It took a lot of patience, even as much as we need now.
Yeah, and it took looking to the future. You know, you couldn't finish any of that stuff in a day and then get a pat on the back. It took time. And so here we have this huge problem that could essentially wipe out the human race in the worst case, and it's easy to deal with. And it's like you're watching a play, and you're in the audience, and Obama's up there speaking. You want to shout out, you know, hey, just talk about climate change. And, you know, the villain is creeping up on the heroine and about to hit her
over the head. The house is on fire. The house is on fire.
Yeah,
right
the
down.
House is on fire. Hey, somebody, you know, up on the stage, can you hear us out here? It's frustrating.
Oh, I share your sentiments, and you are so eloquent and so wise and so cool. My favorite grandpa now, Roger.
Oh, well, thank you. I hope I can live up to that, Betsy.
Oh,
you're somebody we admire very much, too.
Thank you. And I don't want to let you go without mentioning your campaign, one of your many good ideas for how we can preserve a livable climate, and that's Go the Limit. What's the status of that project?
Well, thank you for asking. We've done a trial run on America's Technology Highway, Route 128, and what we did was go out with a few friends, and basically we drove the speed limit in tandem. The speed limit on Route 128 is 55 miles an hour, and you would never know it because people are averaging between 65 and 70. So for just a few minutes, making sure there were no emergencies behind us, no ambulances or fire engines, we drove next to each other. And in a few minutes, we had, I don't know, maybe 100 cars behind us. And we had signs on the car, gothelimit.org, so people could look up to see what we were doing. And I would encourage listeners to go and look. And the point is that having been involved in climate activism for 5 years and seeing that you can spend, as we did, 3 months organizing a rally at the Old North Bridge in Concord in Minuteman National Park under the auspices of the 350.org, and you get 50 communities involved and have 500 people and great speakers, and then have nothing really tangible come out of that except a mention of being one of the great rallies that went on around the world that day. And we thought, gee, wouldn't it be more efficient if we had the you know, three or four people on a highway with signage to wake people up about how urgent this climate change is? And it's out of really caring for our human beings and our fellow Americans that we want to get the word out efficiently, that we need to change direction quickly. And to us, what better way to do it than to have a civil obedience movement where we're basically obeying the speed limit, and with a coordinated campaign, as someone such as Bill McKibben could do, to have this done around the country in major cities on one day, we think it could serve as a wake-up call that the media could not ignore, that would get attention, and then with the right explanation of what we're doing, you know, like the kid that doesn't want to get up out of bed when the alarm clock rings and go to school, we'd say, this is a wake-up call to Americans. We're sorry we inconvenienced you for a few minutes, but the point is, you need to wake up because we're headed in the wrong direction. We're going too fast towards a big problem, and believe me, you'll be thankful that we changed direction before we get to the point where the food shortages occur and it's too late to change direction.
You don't think, like the captain of that ill-fated Italian cruise ship, you should order dinner and wine and worry about it later?
Oh, that's a great analogy. That's exactly right. He says he slipped and fell into the lifeboats, abandoning ship. We don't need leaders like that. We need the captains who will stay on the ship to, you know, point the way to the life rafts, and that's what we need Obama to do, to point out the science of climate change being real, that it's serious, and we have a great opportunity to create jobs, preserve a livable climate, win another election, another term as president. Again, it's a win-win-win for him. So I would encourage everyone to call the president, 202-456-1111, or go to www.whitehouse.gov and leave a comment, or go to our website, www.gwenet, that's G-W-E-N-E-T.org, and we've got many links there that people can use to get more information on this subject, including links to your wonderful operations. And I'll end on a good note, and I have three brothers, and I always talk about climate change with them, and one of them asked me about a year or so ago, and it gets to my point about why Obama needs to speak out. He said, "Roger, if this climate change thing is as bad as you say it is, why are you the only one talking about it? Why don't the weather people talk about it, or the president, or the news people?" And so if Obama would talk about it, it would move the ball forward by a tremendous amount. And the good news is I saw my brother just a couple days ago, and he said, "Roger, do you know Richard Alley?" I said, "Oh, yeah, he's one of the leading climate scientists who's testified before Congress." And my brother says, "Well, I'm reading one of his books." So David is getting it. He's starting to read up on things, and that made Susan and me feel great for a while.
And I tell the story often of Hurricane, Wilma, I think it was, it hit Florida right in the wake of Katrina, and my sister-in-law, who is of a different political party and not one to have been, you know, an environmentalist or believe in climate change, became a believer when their power went out for 11 days. And when she finally asked me, you know, when I expressed sympathy and then said, "Perhaps this is climate change hitting our shores and we may be seeing more of this," she hung up. She was speechless, called me back the next day and said, "Well, if this is, I don't think I can stay here, but in the meantime, what should I do?" I said, "Well, start by, you know, buying a hybrid car." And they were the first ones in their neighborhood to buy a Prius, inviting a lot of questions and curiosity. And I felt that was a victory. Now, if we can just spread that out among the rest of 300 million Americans,
yes,
we'll be in better shape. Roger Shamel, I'm so happy to have you on board the Green Front ship and being part of my crew. Really always a pleasure to have you on, and thanks for being available. Again, on kind of short notice, but I had to get your reaction to the president's speech with the green lenses on.
Thank you, Betsy. Keep up the great work that you do, too.
Likewise, and the Global Warming Education Network is a fabulous organization started and run by Roger and his wife Susan. I urge you to go to their website as well. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be speaking to another one of my favorite green friends, Peter Sinclair of Climate Crocs, right after this message.